companions. We help you discover your many layers. You peel your car, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
Kia ora, thanks for asking me to come and have a conversation with you. So called Jackie Moyes Aho. My name is Jackie Moyes. I was born in Tamaki Makaurau in Auckland, but now I am based in Pōneke in Wellington. I'm in my 40s. I have children and dogs. I'm very passionate about sunrises and sunsets. And I'm the creative director of Homeground, a project working with women in the justice system.
Could you tell us more about Homeground? How did it start? What have you been working on?
Homeground was started in 2019, and it was a response to all of the challenges I was seeing in the justice system, specifically around women, specifically around the lack of trauma-informed practice, and also around the importance of the creative process and how limited that was, not just in the prison, but also in the community, as a way to deal with the impact of trauma.
And how did you manage to put everything together, including the finances, the access to such spaces? Because, I mean, justice system, it's not like you could just go, hi, let me just come in and do a project.
Yeah, and I, you know, to be fair, I've been working around the prison sort of spaces and places since 2002. So I started when I was much younger by accident. I just got a degree in education and gender studies, quite passionate about the impact of abuse on, I guess, on our ability to learn and be healthy community members. So I'd studied a lot around that and was very interested in reducing sexual violence, particularly with young women in the far north, which is where I spent a lot of time living up around Whangarei and the Hokianga. So I guess I've been working around these prison spaces, and I spent a long time also working as a film censor. So I'd seen a lot of the impact of highly sexualized violence, gendered violence, you know, and then ended up being an advisor for Arts Access Aotearoa, which meant I would work across all of, at the time there was 19 prisons, and I spent 6 years advocating for arts initiatives to get into those prisons and into the community. I guess the difference with Homeground and how we started changing the shape of our work was that prisons very quickly became overcrowded, you know, during this whole mass incarceration. I think globally in lots of Western countries, you know, prisons were the answer. It was this crazy, what looked like, you know, the prison industrial complex, that whole school to prison pipeline. All of those things have been kicking off for years. But I think in New Zealand around sort of 2016, we just started seeing this crazy amount of people, double bunking started. The resources for women in terms of rehab, even drug treatment rehab, went from 9 months to 3 months. And at the time, my friend Anita Grafton, she was the clinical manager in the drug treatment unit at our local women's prison, she sort of said to me, you know, we're asking women to tell their stories, to figure out who they are in the system, and it's just not fair to be doing that in a caged space, which is heavily institutionalized. So we started coming up with these different projects, but very quickly realized there was no point doing them inside almost. You know, we needed to do them in the community as well. It needed to be a bridge. So the first people we approached actually was Creative New Zealand and different arts funding bodies, because although it was a wellbeing project and it was really about how do you manage and stay sane in these crazy places which are not built for wellbeing, we decided that we wanted to go with a real arts lens. But of course, there is that balance of health, well-being, and then we got stuck in this place in between. Arts people don't want to fund something that's all sitting in that well-being space, and the well-being people don't want to fund the art project. So what we really had to do, and the first thing, I guess, whenever I'm looking at a collab, obviously I already had those connections inside, so I knew people in the prison system. I also knew a lot of women who I'd worked with who were really keen on doing a mentoring project. So the more we would work with women inside, the more they became leaders in their own right. And so we really wanted to support them to uplift others using creative tools. Anyway, we approached CNZ and we approached the Department of Corrections. And the Department of Corrections said, look, we don't have the capacity to do anything in the prison. At that point, there was an overflow of women in another prison, in a men's prison. It was chaos. So we actually got picked up by a really cool probation team. And we approached corrections. They had at that point had a focus group called the Women's Strategy Team. And although we've always advocated for social change and social justice, there does come a point where you have to partner. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things about when you're coming at a system that's so broken. How do you take funding from them and all? Are you just greasing the wheel? Where do you sit on that continuum of, do you believe in prison abolition? How can you go, hey, can you pay me to come and work in your system and make it more bearable? Like, it's a real personal challenge. And so I guess for us, when we kind of did get picked up by the probation and the women's strategy team, we had to find principles that aligned with us. And there was, back in the day, I think it was 2017-18, there was a women's strategy drafted. And in that, they said, it seemed like very simple goals, but one was that all staff in the prison would be or understand trauma-informed practice. Now, that doesn't seem like much, but if you're actually looking in the prison space, that's huge. Absolutely huge. They haven't achieved it, but it's great that they could put it in a document.
Yeah.
You know? And we support that, obviously, you know, because when we work inside, we also feel like we're also working with staff, not just the women. It's about the community changing and shifting. So that was one. The other one was that it was relevant and engaging. And we realized quite quickly that if we were going to sign on to, you know, being funded by the Department of Corrections, what does relevant and engaging mean? Well, for us, it meant co-creation. It meant devising together. It meant actually running a pilot where the woman got to inform, shape, and create whatever home ground looked like. So that's what we did. We pitched to do a pilot project. We brought women on board, and we spent several weeks developing what home ground was. There was myself as the creative practitioner, and then there was Anita Grafton, who was a clinical practitioner. And we had a collective of women. And over that time, we worked out these beautiful rituals. We tried multidisciplinary artwork. We realized quite quickly that actually we had to hold the space so that artists could come in and just be artists. So that's how we found there was this sort of division, I guess, between the arts and well-being. It's almost like it was arts happening with high quality artists, but the well-being came from our packaging of the home ground. And it's only through being super flexible and super adaptive that you can do that. And that's how we ended up with Creative New Zealand Arts Funding, because we were then able to go, well, you know what? This is where artists fit in this work, because we'd done that pilot and we'd practiced. But of course, over the next, I mean, it's been 5 years now that home ground has been running. And every year the projects change shape depending on the artist, depending on the space and the climate of the time. Obviously, COVID has had a massive impact.
So artists are hired to enter prison space with you folks to do a project with them?
Yeah, so prior to this year, which has been very hard going because of COVID, we would, the first sort of rounds of projects, we would hire artists, they would come in, we'd do a three-week process, we'd have a creative writer, an art therapist, a movement specialist, and say a vocal or performance art kind of specialist. And every day it would be like a performing arts project. Whereas in the community, it's not so performing arts based. It's very much differently. It's a different structure.
So the engagement, it's like a co-creation devising sort of space where they go in and they make something, improvise something all together?
Yeah. So we always start with, you know, because it's kind of like, if you've been in a space with no colour, no music, no self-expression, no, not even a first name, right? Because you're a surname and you're a number. Oh. You know, you're in that space. So we're coming in with all our colours and our glitter and our, like, big earrings and our whatever it is that we bring in to sort of, you know, acts of resistance within the system. The women are often like, first they've got to get over how weird we are. they're like, wow, you guys are so weird. And we're like, yeah, we're artists, you know. And so it's kind of like, it's a slowly, slowly, gently, gently. Because we're also asking them, and in that space of creative expression, to be vulnerable. Mm. Yeah. And it's not safe to just walk into the prison and go, hey, everyone, let's write a poem about how we feel. Because, you know, if someone else gets hold of that poem or that makes them vulnerable, we're doing a disservice. Mm. And we have really strong guiding principles that have been developed over the years. And one of those, obviously, is do no harm. So, yeah, we do devise everything, but we do it very slowly. And it's like small stepping stones. So we often start with things like creative writing or waiata, singing. Card making, mark making, like, you know, putting down a huge piece of paper on a table and saying, hey, let's just doodle, see where we get to. Yeah.
I'm just asking because there are different types of artists. There are artists who are used to teaching in education spaces, in school, and their approach will be a bit more, like, different.
Yeah.
And then there are artists who just you know, very flexible, like participatory, like, oh, what do you guys want to do? And then let's see where, you know, my medium or like what I'm familiar with, my expertise can fit in, and let's try and do something together. And then there are artists that's more kind of fine art, like, this is what I do, and, you know, I can show you, but yeah, this is what I do.
Yeah. And we have kind of a sliding scale of collaboration. Right. So the prison space is quite different from the community space. Like we have kind of a rule, an unspoken rule, but it's quite spoken. You've got to sort of work with us in the community before we go into prison. And like we used to back in the good old days of, you know, we had very limited just project funding. We would basically sign people up who we knew were really good at their practice, who could roll with anything. Having flexibility was a huge skill. Being able to park your ego at the door. Like, you know, if you can't do that, you can't work in those spaces. But there is a different levels of collaboration. So for those that are more the fine art, they might respond to our artwork because they can control their product or their process. Yeah. So for example, we have the most amazing collaborator, Nathan, who creates different scents. So we'll gift him a poem or a vibe, a way that we are feeling or something we want to express, and he'll respond to that with a smell, a scent. And so he has control over that product and we have this beautiful gift, but we've been able to do an exchange. Mm. And then the far end of that might be working with Java Dance Theatre. They would also come and meet with a woman that experienced their poetry, their writing, their weaving. And then they would actually create a product that spoke to that work, and they would come back to the space and live perform that to the woman, which is a really sort of embodied, life-changing experience. Mm. But we also, we have people that will come into the space and just be with us for 6 hours and say, what do you want to do? And we'll make clay or we'll do raranga weaving. It's very different depending on who's collaborating with us.
How did you convince your funders? I mean, I can understand for Creative New Zealand arts funders, because if there's an artist there, there's an art medium and people are having access to the arts. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, self-explanatory. But the justice system, like... Department of Corrections, how did you convince them, like, okay, I'm going to do an art project, I'm not quite sure what the artist will do?
So we it's not just about the woman, I think, for us. Like, a lot of artists have this sort of we don't go in there to change the woman. That's not our jam. We're not rehabilitative, we're not therapy. We are very much, we're going in there for women to tap into their own creative process. So we don't make any promises other than women will learn more about themselves. The other thing we do is, because it's all group focus, group work, what we're trying to do is develop healthy communities within those spaces. And so I do think Corrections have seen Homeground work with people and develop a community. And, like, to be honest, community connection is what most women need. You know, they're so isolated. And particularly because we work in the prison space and in the community, it means women trust us before they come out. So when they come out of prison, they know they can give us a call.
Mm.
You know, we work across both those spaces. And I think maybe if we weren't, in the early days, we definitely had, why aren't you doing this for men? You should be doing this for men. We have so many more men on sentence. And I was like, no, because that's exactly why we're doing this. Because it's actually women, I think also women primarily raising the kids, whether or not they're an auntie, a mum or a grandma. Most women, inside or outside, on sentence, have a whānau family responsibility. And for us, that's super important. So Homeground was kind of built on that concept of, like, sometimes it's too hard for us to go home. And so how do we support ourselves to get to a place where we can go home and remain, I guess, who we are while we've been away, or try and put some of those well-being practices in place, like sobriety. You know, sobriety is a big one. Going home kicks everything off, hard to stay sober. So anyway, Corrections has seen us working over the number of years, and as we've got further into it, and with CNZ support and Ministry of Culture and Heritage support, with that partnership funding is what makes it possible. We could not have survived on one funder's amount, if that makes sense. So I think we've been very clear about our process, our product, and the other thing is training artists to work in the space. Is really important, because the more funders want to, so say Corrections, they've just done it this year, they've basically said we want 12 people to work across the prison space. Now that is awesome, because people should be paid to do this work. It is specialized work, but
if they've never worked in a prison before, or they've never worked with this kind of very specific area of the population, then what are you doing? Mm. You know? So I think Homeground was a bit of a test pilot in that sense. Yeah.
What have you seen as the impact of Homeground after these years of working in the justice system, prison spaces?
I think across for women, I guess, in the prison, the really simple answer to that would be bringing light into a really dark space. Women that are feeling hopeless and, you know, mental health is plummeting, we can come in and we can actually give them an avenue of hope and focus during that time. So almost not like respite, but like, hey, just come and be human for the day. You know, create something that you're proud of, share it with friends and whānau. You can post it out. We can put it on our website, Friends and Whānau. You know, there's really basic stuff like that. But I do think really it's that strength through connection. Once people are connected to other people, they feel like there's possibilities for change, for a new life, for hope, that their kids are going to be okay, you know? So that's kind of one area of it. I think in the community projects, women have just, it's like giving people faith back that other people can be cool or okay. You know, there's such a two-world scenario going on in this country, and so often people have been so beaten down by the system and so beaten down by the rest of their whānau or community, they don't have any faith left in people. So we'll just say, hey, come along for 3 weeks. We're going to have some awesome kai. We're going to do some beautiful artwork. We're going to just stay on that positive vibe for 3 weeks. And for that, for some, can be life-changing.
I'm just going to interject here. Yeah. Whānau is family, right? Whānau and kai is
yeah.
food.
Yeah, kai is food. Yeah, yeah. And actually, that's the other thing to acknowledge too, is that without the New Zealand context, so without the beautiful gift that is Māori practices, ways of being, language, we wouldn't be able to practice the way we do because that in New Zealand gives us all a shared structure. So kai, the importance of food, is just massively important in Homeground. and some of the other benefits too, I think, if you look back at the idea of a probation staff member or a corrections officer, being able to see women in a different light and understand that those women are whole people. And not so much because probation is bad or corrections are bad and the women are bad. You know, it's very black and white. So what we want to do is create a very nuanced sort of radical empathy model where everyone can go, hey, we've all got a part to play in this. It's not your fault or your fault. We actually have to work together. And in those moments is when we have really amazing advocacy. And being able to advocate for the woman was part of what Homeground was founded on. Being able to advocate and go, this is where the system is failing these women. Can you guys address that? They can say, hey, wow, we didn't know that. Or yes, we did know that. We're working on this. Which also gives the woman a bit of hope that by sharing their artwork or sharing their story, the system will change. And that's it's a really, I guess that's the tangible impact of advocacy, is that if policy changes and people are more trauma-informed, then hopefully our systems will be less harmful for women.
So we've gotten to the systems part now, which is where I kind of want to elaborate a little bit more. Like of all the years that you've been doing this work and things that you've seen and learned, what are things about the system that you would like people to know about? Because, I mean, this is space that a lot of people don't have access to, don't know much about, and don't really know what are the systemic pressures.
The system. Well, it's broken. You know, like I think that's probably the first thing to accept, is that we don't really believe the system is working the way it should for anyone. The inequity that exists within our communities is massive. We're living in this sort of weird capitalist colonialist time with a pandemic, with wars. You know, the system's not necessarily built to support women and children, first and foremost. And I think for all of us that work at Homeground, we have varied lived experiences. Many of us are parents or grandparents, aunties, whatever. The system is not set up to cater to our well-being. And so I think when we look at poverty, when we look at racism, when we look at sexual violence, all of those things are the norm in our community. And I think people find it really easy to forget that. But in New Zealand, we live with such a high rate of suicide. To me, it's super visible. Yeah? The system is not working. So I think that's where we come from. We also don't believe in prisons. Which makes it quite hard to work in prisons. But there's also a continuum, you know, like, yeah, we don't believe in prisons, but while women are still in them, we need to be in there to provide that support and advocacy. So although I'd love to work in that space of system change, I think we've probably been on the ground for so long, it's very hard for us to walk away from that. So I guess, yeah, the prison system for me, most of the women in that space have been so severely traumatized or affected by their incarceration that the system can't fix that, but community can. And that's really what I want to see, is it's communities, not prisons. You know, we need to be addressing issues way before they happen and at a younger time. For example, drug addiction is a really common one, which we all know is often a response to severe trauma. It's an illness. And in New Zealand, I think the lack of support to deal with addiction means people end up in the system before they can get any support and help. And the amount of times I've had women say to me, prison saved my life. You know, which is really hard to hear because I don't believe in prisons. But here's all these women saying prison saved my life. So I think there's
why are they saying that?
Because they're safe. Yeah, because they have to get clean, because they're away from whoever's hurting them. You know, it's just really, you know, I was just in there on Saturday working, doing the pre-Christmas kind of like, how can we support these women to reconnect to their kids over this time, especially when they don't have any capacity to even just get a Christmas card, you know, post that out to your kid. Christmas is a super depressing time. It's a super depressing time for anyone inside. I've been around the system long enough to feel like I've tried the policy stuff, I've tried the legislative stuff, I've tried the activist stuff. I'm here in this kind of weird arts activism space. I'm super hopeful. And every time we change a government, I'm like, are they going to do it this time? This time. Right now, we're just in a space where we've just had an election won by a very conservative, some would say racist government, who are making statements that are terrifying for anyone that works in the community, like that lived experience isn't valuable. That's terrifying for me because those are the people in my mind have the answers as to how we move forward as a community, you know? But I guess it's also, you get a little bit like, okay, up and down, let's ride the wave of the right wing then, you know? So I'm hopeful, but also at the same time getting quite cynical.
I'm going to touch on a pain point we all feel, which is that, like, realistically, how much and how far can home ground change or influence or affect the system?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think that goes back to my belief that it's communities, not prison. And at some point we have to walk away from the system, not completely, obviously, you know, there's good things about some of it, like the health system. Yay, thank God for free healthcare. But even then, I'm like, do we have free healthcare in New Zealand? Anyway, it's another conversation. I think Homeground aims to affect or enhance that kind of hopefulness that women have for their kids and their community. If we can keep them away from the system, then kids are growing up with their mums. You know, that's our aim. Because no matter what the system does, at some point we have to be or survive in our whānau unit as well as we can. And yes, poverty is there, and yes, there's so much stuff going on that we have absolutely no control over. But I guess for us, that's where it sits, is the community.
Is this something that the departments you work with recognize and acknowledge?
About how broken the system is, you mean? Or how home ground's limited capacity to change the world?
Not that. But, you know, like, that, you know, in the many ways that the system's broken, the issues, the struggles that women or inmates sort of face, the entire of their life experience and story that brought them to the point where of incarceration, which actually requires more of a systemic intervention way before.
Totally.
Then, do they actually recognize, understand that?
Yeah, I think that's the heartbreaking thing, is I know so many good people working in the system. Mm. I know so many women that are doing their utmost to change things. And I guess for me, it's kind of like especially when we just went through this last election, I was kind of like, oh my God, this is just another, you know, more of the same. We're going backwards again. So I think if I look back 8 years, I could say there was probably two people that understood this. And then I look through the last 6 years and I go, oh my gosh, there's been a tidal wave of understanding around trauma-informed practice, around partnership in the treaty, you know. I think that understanding that Te Tiriti o Waitangi is our founding document, that has changed a lot over the last 6 years, which is why it was so upsetting when people were standing in the political space saying we're going to create a referendum on the treaty. Like, for us, I guess that's just so backwards. So yeah, I mean, I do think a lot of people are aware of things, but I think it's like you're turning around a massive ship. Yeah.
That's the Treaty of Waitangi, which, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm still quite new here, there is the Maori version that was written, and then there was the English version that was written, and the English version basically didn't fully well translate the Maori version, and there was different interpretation, which became the situation that this whole colonization situation was basically quite unfairly executed for the Maori community. So that's really where we're looking back in New Zealand now to the treaty and understanding the Maori version of the treaty to encapsulate and try and, I guess, right the wrongs over the years.
Yeah, and just honour the treaty is something that, you know, we do have a treaty. So therefore there is there's a document which we can go back to and say, this was the interpretation, this is where you've gone so terribly wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I guess, unlike other countries, we actually have that on paper, you know. So the government needs to uphold that treaty, and the community does, you know. Less of the racism, more of the land back, thanks, you know. Like, it's a massive issue, and it affects everything, and particularly around incarceration, you know. But anyway, I think there's a lot more eloquent people that can, you know, looking at some of that.
And I have sort of a point around continuing from systems change and sort of wanting to focus more on the financial bit.
yeah, sure, go.
Because the work that you're doing, it's not just arts, and it's not just justice system. It's also systemic. It's actually it crosses quite a few government departments, like Ministry of, I don't know, Social Affairs type of work. Probably to a certain extent also like healthcare,
definitely health promotion kind of,
and then your, you know, Ministry of Justice, Department of Corrections kind of type, and then the arts as well. And when people are working across sectors and want to pull something together, it's painstaking. It takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of effort trying to convince different departments and ministries, if you even make it through the door, about the worth of the project, the value of the project, but also like why it should be funded when they have no track record or any example that's been done before that they could base it by. And now what you've done for the last years is basically showing that, right, this is what it is, it works, it crosses these different spaces. But then how ideally could this be financially sustainable? Like, do you think funding should come from different departments as a pooled sort of fund to create sort of secure annual funding? Or should the organization be sort of employed as a contractor and given, like, you know, wages that public servants would be given at the whatever rate that they have, which would be higher than any project sort of funding with the benefits that public servants would get? Like, what kind of combination, like, what kind of financial situation or funding situation? I struggle with the word funding, because funding, it's kind of like you have to ask for something.
Sure.
But then it's a service, like how public servants are all, you know, working towards something. Yeah. And you don't call that funding. It's just they're paid for their labor and their expertise and their professional experiences. So I wonder what is the ideal sort of, you know, setup. Yeah.
Yes, like you say, project funding was how we started, and it's not sustainable.
Yeah. So, it's ridiculous as well. You have a well-functioning project and you have to apply every year, in a proposal.
I mean, and in some ways that is quite, it can be cool, but I feel like I'm running a translation service. So, you know, for example, at one point we had our two core funders were Department of Corrections and Creative New Zealand. So trying to write reporting and do financial outcomes that meet both of those needs on completely other ends of the scale were very hard. So, that double application, double reporting. I would say, though, things like when the Ministry of Women funded us, we were able to do a really beautiful pilot project around supporting women in the community. And that actually then allowed us to test pilot a 3-day workshop, which we could then pitch to the Ministry of Culture and Heritage. So every little project adds up to this beautiful tapestry. So there are benefits of that. I think also too, when you work in our space, you have to be so adaptable and so flexible, which in itself is exhausting. And during this COVID time, I don't know anyone that hasn't burnt out at least twice. You know, that whole moving to digital, that whole, oh, we must have a website now, when we're just a tiny, weeny little baby project. You know, we'd hire a space for 3 weeks that didn't even have a closing door. You know, we really came up through the grassroots of it. But I think the big shift for us was the consistent long-term funding, well, three-year funding from the Ministry of Culture and Heritage, Manatū Taonga. And very luckily in Aotearoa, New Zealand, when COVID hit, the government quite rightly said, if we don't support artists, they will all be gone, you know, and that would have happened. And so the Ministry of Culture and Heritage came basically with a proposal around the care recovery package, and that was to create employment for artists who would continue to deliver to the community. And I think that for us was the changing point. And that three-year funding has allowed us to have a small core crew where we can continue to develop home ground. Now, that's where the gap is. I think, you know, from the arts funding and the corrections, of course, we have all this sort of project-based idea, or we've got to have all this, not necessarily product, but product, really. At the end of the day, we need to have a show or a book or a website. So I think it's the administrative fund that's really lacking, and that's still an issue for us today. So I think I wouldn't want to be under government solely, to be honest, because I think even now watching the election happen, depending on who's in power will depend on what is important for us. And the real risk of being an advocacy artist activist crew is that you have to meet the funding demands rather than you creating the thing that's requesting the funding, if that makes sense. At least with funding applications, we can change and refresh and stretch. I guess what I would want is 3 year minimum funding with an administrative
budget.
Yeah, and I think it's, I'm still amazed that I can spend so much time doing administration. I'm amazed.
If they were to cut the administration requirements.
Yeah, I know, right? Right. What does that look like? Yeah, I think it's still reporting, though. It's still, you know, it's still GST, the tax. There's still a certain amount of admin that's always going to have to be done. But yes, maybe. But then I don't know. I like reporting in a way. It keeps us accountable. And I think the documentation of work for me personally is super important. Because I worked for so long, I guess the prison space was, you couldn't take photos. You couldn't keep any names. You couldn't. It was so fluid. And then we had like 9 years where it was all run by volunteers. So there was no documentation. Like the prison art scene just fell off the earth. Only a few survived, you know. It was kind of a weird time. So I actually think that documentation is super important. So I kind of like the way that reporting makes us do that. I just would like to do one report for everybody. That would be my dream. Yeah, but I also do think if you look at how much funding goes to prison, I think the last time I looked, it was like 120-something thousand per year to house someone inside. And I'm like, 120,000? Surely they could have housing. And, you know, everything could be okay for that. Yeah. You know, like, that's more than people's minimum wage.
Yeah.
So what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know? And I guess that's, you know, home ground no doubt will have an expiry date. You know, we've got another couple of years funding to work inside the prison system. But, you know, for us, if women with lived experience aren't kind of coming up, popping up, having leadership roles, then what are we doing the work for? Because it was created and founded so that women with lived experience would have a voice in this space that could advocate for social change, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay, we're sort of nearing the end of our recording, and I have this question that I ask everyone. If there is something that someone can do to make a difference in this world, what would it be?
I think just support your community. Whoever it is, whatever it is, support your community. Like, we all have something to give and a gift to offer. And just take a minute, look after your kids. That's the first thing, man. Just take time with your kids. Take time with your kids. They're so important. The world is a hard place right now. They are seeing all of these things. It breaks my heart. So I just think having time with your fams, you know, your family, your friends, and community, I guess I believe that's where it all starts. Just take a minute and share the love. Yeah.
Thank you for that. you know, I've been having a lot of conversations these days with people around my age in their 20s, but also people who are a lot older and senior in the community hub, like in their 70s or 80s. And And we talk about the climate, and we talk about anxiety, and we talk about the sense of hopelessness that young people face, and this sort of slow crushing of the soul in this, you know, capitalist system, and a system that's broken, and, you know, wanting to seek exponential growth, unlimited growth when we have limited resources.
So much pressure.
And, and there are moments when, you know, as a young person, you just feel at a loss, like, what am I supposed to do when I'm bombarded with all these information that is mostly negative? It's about, you know, war and violence, and you're having these really brutal, violent images stuffed in your face, like, every time you log on. And I think it's easy for people to feel lost and feel really helpless and burn out and feel depressed and feel anxious. And your point around community and, you know, spending time with your kids, spending time with your family, spending time with whatever your community is, if family is not the way, you know, or different kinds of communities that surround and the
community is what you make it. Yeah.
Like that's an important piece. And I think for whatever that is to come, we're going to see a lot more disasters, natural disasters and whatnot, and disruptions in the world. But that climate resilience piece, community is always going to be at the heart of it. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'll support each other through that. Yeah. So, you know, that connection and strength through connection and community is where it's at going forward. And just to keep the hope, man, because, you know, other generations have gone through stuff before. And we've just, we've got to keep on keeping on.
Yep. That's what we're all going to have to do.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Fia. That's awesome. Thank you, what a great chat.
Hello, Onions Talk listeners. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.